Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And this is kind of following on from the last podcast I did on the subject of America in the post-war era. We talked yesterday about the mass abundance that America experienced and the explosion of affluence and living standards and consumerism, the development of America as an automobile society, and the provision of cheap housing. And so today I'm going to look at one of the critical thinkers who observed all of this and came to his own conclusions. And this was the philosopher and theorist and psychoanalyst Eric Fromm, whom I've spoken of before. And today I'm going to be looking at his book, The Sane Society. This is my favourite book of his, because it focuses exclusively on this era. Eric Fromm was from the Frankfurt School of Social Research. I did a podcast on them a couple of years ago now. And he was one of the members of the school, along with Theodore Adorno and Herbert Marcuse, who fled to America in 1933 as a result of the rise of Adolf Hitler. If you're a Jewish Marxist-inclined psychoanalyst, prospects in Nazi Germany are very, very poor. When Eric Fromm got to America after the Second World War, he looked at this unprecedented explosion in prosperity. Eric Fromm had previously written his book, The Fear of Freedom, to try to explain the appeal of dictators and dictatorships. Now, he wrote The Sane Society, which attempted to kind of decode the reality of modern mass democratic capitalist society, and asked the question, well, is it sane? And he came to the conclusion, well, it certainly thinks it is, but in reality it's anything but. Now, I read from the first chapter. Nothing is more common than the idea that we, the people living in the Western world of the 20th century, are eminently sane. Even the fact that a great number of individuals in our midst suffer from more or less severe forms of mental illness produces little doubt with respect to the general standard of our mental health. We are sure that by introducing better methods of mental hygiene, we shall improve still further the state of our mental health. And as far as individual mental disturbances are concerned, we look at them as strictly individual incidents, perhaps with some amazement, so that so many of these incidents should occur in a culture which is supposedly sane. Can we be so sure that we're not deceiving ourselves? Many an inmate of an insane asylum is convinced that everybody else is crazy except himself. Many a severe neurotic believes that his compulsive rituals or his hysterical outbursts are normal reactions to somewhat abnormal circumstances. What about ourselves? Let us, in good psychiatric fashion, look at the facts. In the last 100 years, we in the Western world have created greater material wealth than any other society in the history of the human race. Yet we've managed to kill off millions of our population in an arrangement which we call war. Aside from smaller wars, we had larger ones in 1870, 1914 and 1939. During these wars, every participant firmly believed that he was fighting in his self-defence, for his honour, or that he was backed up by God. The groups with whom one is at war are often one day to the next looked upon as cruel, irrational fiends whom one must defeat to save the world from evil. But a few years after the mutual slaughter is over, the enemies of yesterday are our friends, the friends of yesterday are enemies, and again, in the full seriousness, we begin to paint them with appropriate colours of black and white. At this moment in the year 1955, we prepared for a mass slaughter which would, if it came to pass, surpass any slaughter the human race has arranged so far. One of the great discoveries in the field of natural science is prepared for this purpose. Everybody is looking with a mixture of confidence and apprehension to the statesmen of various peoples, ready to heap all praise on them if they succeed in avoiding a war, and ignoring the fact that it is only these very statesmen who ever cause a war. Usually not even through their bad intentions, but by their unreasonable mismanagement of affairs entrusted to them. In these outbursts of destructiveness and paranoid suspicion, however, we're not behaving differently from what the civilised part of mankind has done in the last 3,000 years of history. Eric Fromm, again writing this at the height of American affluence in 1955, goes on to write about the economic system. He says, "Our direction of economic affairs is scarcely more encouraging. We live in an economic system in which a particularly good crop is often an economic disaster, and we restrict some of our agricultural productivity in order to stabilise the market, although there are millions of people who do not have the very things we restrict and who need them badly. Right now, our economic system is functioning very well, because among other reasons, we spend billions of dollars per year to produce armaments. Economists look with some apprehension to the time when we stop producing armaments. Then the idea that a state should produce houses and other useful things instead of weapons easily provokes accusations of endangering freedom and individual initiative. We have a literacy above 90% of the population. We have radio, television, movies, and newspaper a day for everybody. But instead of giving us the best of past and present literature and music, these media and communications supplement by advertising, fill the minds of men with the cheapest trash, lacking any sense of reality, with sadistic fantasies which a halfway cultured person would be embarrassed to entertain once in a while." I suppose here, Eric Fromm was from the world of the late 19th, early 20th century bourgeois, European bourgeoisie, coming face to face with the realities of American mass culture. And he goes on to dissect American life by looking at statistics for suicide, homicide and alcoholism, suggesting that these indicate a great societal malaise in America. And the book is all about the paradox of a society that seems to be better and better at producing material things, making most of its inhabitants, or a significant proportion of its inhabitants, more and more unhappy or emotionally distressed as a result. And what Eric Fromm does is he gets to the heart of one of the key debates of the 20th century about the relationship between authentic human needs for connection and authenticity and love and the ability to exist within communities and to be creative and all these kinds of things, and the constant march of science and technology and of Western capitalism, which, as Marx theorised, creates a process whereby all that is solid melts into air that the revolutionary power of capitalism tears apart all pre-existing institutions and structures, and particularly social ones, resulting in societies appearing to be empty and denuded, particularly in the social context. Looking at America and other advanced European countries together, he said, "We find then that the countries in Europe which are amongst the most democratic, peaceful and prosperous, and the United States, the most prosperous country in the world, show the most severe symptoms of mental disturbance. The aim of the whole socio-economic development of the Western world is that of the materially comfortable life, relatively equal distribution of wealth, stable democracy and peace, and the very countries which have come closest to this aim show the most severe signs of mental imbalance. It is true that these figures in themselves do not prove anything, but at least they are startling. Even before we enter into a more thorough discussion of the whole problem, these data raise questions as to whether there is not something fundamentally wrong with our way of life and with the aims towards which we are striving. Could it be that the middle-class life of prosperity, while satisfying our material needs, leaves us with a feeling of intense boredom, and that suicide and alcoholism are pathological ways to escape from this boredom? Could it be that these figures are a drastic illustration for the truth of the statement that man lives not by bread alone, and they could show that modern civilization fails to satisfy profound needs in man? If so, what are these needs?" Eric Fromm takes on the idea of sociological relativism in his book. The idea, and it was a kind of sociological and anthropological notion, was that any society that functions without destroying itself is basically normal, for want of a better word, or functioning. And that anyone who experienced mental illness in such a society, or found that they were alienated or in opposition to that society, was not necessarily the society that was the problem, but the individual. And the individual was unable to make the necessary personal adjustments to fit into that society.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
See, Obviously, there are huge problems with this this idea. It's entirely possible, for example, that Nazi Germany, had it not gone to war with its with the European powers and the Soviet Union and America, would have continued to function in a relatively ordered way in perpetuity. And the idea that an individual is pathological or insane if they don't fit into that is obviously a very, very troubling notion. And society is perhaps part of a normal functioning of a society is having oppositional individuals that don't seem to fit in anywhere. So Eric Fromm takes on this notion. He says, to speak of a sane society implies a premise different from sociological relativism. It makes sense only if we assume that there can be a society which is not sane, and this assumption, in turn, implies that there are universal criteria for mental health which are valid for the human race as such, and according to which the state of health of each society can be judged. This position of normative humanism is based on a few fundamental premises. And he goes on to list that, you know, the criteria that all human beings have, i.e. two arms, two legs and a head, are not just external, but internal. There are internal psychic qualities, he called, or characteristics of their emotional functioning. They feel roughly similar things, irrespective of who and where and what they are. Fromm argued that freedom and spontaneity and the ability to express oneself and become the full expression of oneself, to live one's own truth, was a fundamental aspect of all human beings. However, there were some societies where these goals were suppressed and a desire to conform, to abandon self-expression becomes the new normal because individuals pattern themselves with one another. They don't wish to be the outcast, and then they simply accept the new reality of that they know and understand of being conformist. In totalitarian societies, Fromm said that this was far more simple to understand, that conformity was directed by the state. However, in notionally democratic societies, conformity is directed by things like the mass media, the use of market economics, and the use of democratic politics itself. Eric Fromm used the Judeo-Christian story of creation as a kind of a metaphor for the development and the maturing of man. For him, the Garden of Eden was our animal nature. We have really been, in his view, ejected from the Garden of Eden. We have stepped beyond being simply members of the animal kingdom at peace with the biosphere, and are now creatures that are sort of divorced of nature, but divorced from it. We are the first moment at which life became aware of itself. The problem, therefore, as Eric Fromm saw it, was that in a society that is geared towards a single goal, and as modern capitalist societies are geared towards the kind of the overriding logic of them is the accumulation of capital, the creation of profits, the motivations of this very strange and complex creature, the human being, are rarely fully met by this this imperative. He said, for example, reason, man's blessing, is also his curse. It forces him to cope everlastingly with the task of solving an insoluble dichotomy. Human existence is different in this respect from that of all other organisms. It is in a state of constant and unavoidable disequilibrium. Man's life cannot be lived by repeating the patterns of his species. He must live. Man is the only animal that can be bored, that can feel evicted from paradise. Man is the only animal who finds his own existence a problem which he has to solve and for which he cannot escape. He cannot go back to the pre-human state of harmony with nature. He must proceed to develop his reason until he becomes the master of nature and of himself. So this is one of the central arguments as to why affluent democratic societies are laden with such unhappiness, that individuals in those societies are really trying to work towards a much more profound existential realization, even if they themselves are not aware of it at the time. This is why mass consumerism often feels hollow and empty, in that once the material conditions that sustain life have been met and satisfied, they're of precious little interest any longer, because they don't actually perform the task of helping life to have a deeper meaning. And Fromm argued that all human beings are in search of this meaning ultimately, because they are aware of their own mortality and because they are aware that life for them is finite, and so it has to have some kind of purpose attached to it. Erich Fromm believed that in each economic epoch that we lived in, certain character types were created. They were created by the economics that surround us, and therefore certain psychological phenomena emerged as a result. He made the point about Victorian society, and he talked about repression. So the Victorians were synonymous with emotional repression, and not just British Victorians, but really kind of the Victorian generation around the world, the generation of the 19th century bourgeoisie. Why was this? These were people who had become a generation, a social class of ownership. Perhaps some of them had been enriched in ways in which their forebears had not. And owning and controlling things, stocks, shares, capital, and the stuff of the world, translated into their day-to-day psychology. Repression, repressing animal instincts, sexual urges, and those kinds of things, which were the kinds of things that were beyond the control of the individual and individual rationality and reason. This became an important kind of marker of modern masculinity, and I suppose to some extent, this is very discussed, of femininity as well. There are as many repressed Victorian women as there are repressed men. And he said in the 1950s, a different kind of capitalism exists. It's more egalitarian capitalism, more people have a stake in it. And it is the kind of democratic capitalism where the get-rich-quick story, the go-west young man dream of self-improvement, that kind of story is prevalent. And therefore, the idea that anyone can make it, particularly in America, with these sort of notions of the American dream, that motivates individual psychology. And there, and from there, Erich Fromm argued in the same society, during the 1940s and 50s, a new kind of individual, the marketing personality, emerges. This is somebody who likes to talk about themselves. This is somebody whose identity is a business card, whose identity is the image of success and of being successful, even if that image is superficial, even if that identity is really a fraud. And he said, to this extent, people are made to feel unhappy and neurotic and depressive, because they are unable to fully express who they are, and all the deeper human urges to have self-expression and creativity and self-actualization and to live their own truth are suppressed by this the modern notion of the rat race. Anyway, I won't labour the point, but The Same Society is a really, really superb book, and it has as much to say about the 21st century as it does about the 1950s. In many ways, the 21st century is just a turbocharged version of what Eric Fromm experienced back in the mid-20th century. It's also a great way of navigating the study of post-war American prosperity. And it reminds us that for all the images of abundance and happy families and white picket fences and suburbia and the American dream, there was a dark underbelly of emotional suffering, and one which is really, really fascinating to explore. Anyway, I'll finish there. If you can support us via Patreon, the link is below. We are reliant to some extent on donations to keep the podcast going. Thanks very much for your time. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.